This is Digital Story Podcast number 763, November 3rd, 2020. Today's theme is An Illuminating Look at Lighting. I'm Derek Story. How to adjust lighting for a person's face, whether it's yours or someone else's, is probably the single most important factor in determining success. In today's podcast, I'll cover techniques for both video and stills photography to help us all present the best versions of one another. I hope you enjoy the show. Okay, before we get into lighting, which we will indeed, I must mention that today is a very big day in the United States. It is voting day, and a lot of us have been voting ahead of time. And the one thing that I want to say is, well, actually, there are two things. The first thing is that it has been exhausting getting here to this point. We don't know what's going to happen today, tonight, the next week in terms of who wins. But the second thing is that regardless of how it turns out, I will be here next week with more photography, and we will take it from there. We vote, we make our choice, and then we live with what happens. I think video conferencing has prompted me to revisit a discussion about lighting. In a way, the last 6 months have been a tour de force of what not to do, right? And we've all sat in on Zoom, Skype, Microsoft Teams calls, and we've all seen what's going on with other people on the screen. And I don't want to knock anyone, because that's not what this is about. What this is about, for those of us who are photographers, who do try to take pretty portraits or artistic portraits, who do try to shoot video that is worth watching, that seeing what's going on with the online meetings really can help us understand what to do with our own lighting, both good and bad. So what I thought I would do today is talk about five lighting techniques or five things to keep in mind. And this is regardless if you're doing stills photography portrait, or if you're doing movie making, or if you're sitting in on a Zoom, Skype, or Teams call, and it's you that's on the screen. These techniques apply to all three of those situations, because at the end of the day, lighting is lighting, right? And I think it's time for a little refresher. So let's start with one of the basics, which is side lighting versus front lighting. And, you know, I think what happens a lot of times is people view, well, I get what I get with lighting. So if it's coming in from the side, then it's coming in from the side. I'm not going to move my whole desk around, my whole computer around, or I can't, you know, change camera position, whatever the reason happens to be. They decide that they're going to live with wherever the light is coming from. But there's a big difference between light coming from the side when you're talking about people pictures versus light coming from the front. So side lighting accentuates detail. It increases texture. Now that is really great for an Adobe building. It's pretty good for architecture. Not so good for when you're taking a picture of Aunt Jane, right? Because Aunt Jane probably does not want side lighting. What Aunt Jane probably wants, and probably what you want as well on your next Zoom call, is that light coming in from the front. Because frontal lighting, or what a lot of times we call fashion lighting, that smooths out texture, that softens everything. That makes, you know, your skin look much better. It is, honestly, in my opinion, better than makeup. If you're a professional and all that sort of stuff, that's different. But if you're on a Zoom call, or if you're doing a portrait of a family member, or if you're out on a job and you want to have that good skin, you want to have that flattering lighting, bring it in from the front, okay? Front lighting smooths out details. Side lighting accentuates them. Number two, the size of the light source matters. And my best example is this. Why are portraits easier on cloudy days than they are on a clear day when you have a laser beam sunshine. Well, on the days that you have laser beam sunshine, the light source is actually just the sun. And because it's so far away, it's a small light source, right? And that is a contrasty light source. Whereas when you have a cloudy day, that light from the sun is diffused by all the clouds. And suddenly you have this gigantic diffuser above you, and that makes the light source larger. The clouds make the light source larger, and that makes the light softer, and it makes it easier to do portraits that way. So the size of the light source matters. So what you want to do for most portrait work is have some larger light source than just a little strobe, right? That little flash on your camera pops up. That's like the sun on a very bright, contrasty day. And it yields about the same kind of effect. So what you want to do is find a way to make that light source bigger, right? So that's why a lot of photographers that use strobes, they will, you know, put a softbox in front of it, or they'll use an umbrella, or they'll bounce it off a wall. Anything to get that light source bigger. Bounce flash is very popular for that reason, because you bounce it up on a white ceiling and the light that comes down is much bigger. It's a much bigger light, and therefore it's softer. Big light source is better than small light source for portraits, and size does matter with the light source when you're taking people pictures. Number 3. Distance matters as well. And I was talking about that with the sun. When the light source is really far away, it gets smaller, right? Essentially. And when it's closer to you, it gets bigger. Okay. Now imagine that you have a diffused light source. So if you have a diffused light source, let's say that you're using a softbox, and you get that softbox within, let's say, 3 feet of your portrait subject, or of you on a Zoom call, or whatever, then you have a bigger light source close to the subject, and so it stays big. So you have a big diffused light source close to you. As you move it back, essentially it gets smaller, and then it gets harsher, right? So the rule of thumb is that you want a diffused light source as close as possible to the subject for the softest lighting. Okay, so distance matters as well. The larger the light source, the closer to the subject, the more flattering the rendering. Number 4, if you can't avoid backlighting, compensate for it. So backlighting is a fact of life. It really is. You know, whether it's a bright background when you're outdoors, whether it's the beach or the snow, or if it's an open window behind you during a Zoom call, you know, backlighting just happens. So what you have to do with backlighting is you have to do something. You can't just let backlighting ruin your shot. So there's 2 things that you can do. Your best options are either compensate for it using exposure compensation. In other words, overexpose a bit for the subject. Now, the backlighting will get very bright in that case, but that's okay. As long as your subject is rendered fine, then let the background go whatever direction it wants. So a lot of times for the exposure compensation approach, that's going to be plus a stop and a half, maybe even plus 2 f-stops, right? Depends on how strong that backlighting is. Another way to go is bring more lighting into the front. That's why photographers sometimes will use a fill light. They'll turn on the flash on their camera and say, okay, I've got the strong backlighting. I'm going to bring some light in from the front. I'm going to pop up the flash and, you know, use that. Now, earlier I was saying that, you know, when you have light coming from that little strobe, right, that's a small light source, that's contrasty, and that's true. However, when you're using it as a fill light to offset strong backlighting, the effect isn't as egregious. It really isn't. And the big trick is, of course, as I've talked about many times, is that fill light coming in, whatever the camera thinks it should do, just dial it back a bit. So let's say that you do minus 1/2 f-stop for flash compensation, or minus 1 stop for flash compensation. Now suddenly you're really getting something that looks good. Now, if your subject has oily skin or shiny skin, or if it's a hot day and they have a little perspiration on their face, that fill light from a flash will cause a little glistening, will cause, you know, that little shiny spot. And so sometimes then it's better if you can use a reflector, you know, they make that light source bigger and not quite so contrasty. But that's not always an option. You don't always have that extra set of hands to hold a reflector to get that big light source. Sometimes you have to use whatever's available to you at the moment. When you're working alone or, you know, dealing with backlighting, your two best options, if you don't have that extra set of hands and you don't have a reflector, then is to either open up the exposure, right, overexpose a little bit, or to turn on a flash and do a little fill light that way. Either way, don't let backlighting ruin the shot, because this is something that I see a lot on Zoom calls where there's a bright light source in the background and their face is just dark and muddy and it is not attractive. It is not attractive at all. My fifth thought on all this is that good lighting technique reduces post-production time. And, you know, one of the most common questions that I get during a portrait shoot is, well, do you retouch? And I say, I usually don't need to. I said, the reason why I don't need to retouch is because I'm using good lighting. You're going to be rendered beautifully, and we don't have to do all that retouching. We don't have to do all that adjusting. You are going to look fabulous. And then when I, you know, show them a sample shot on the back of the LCD and they see what I'm talking about, they go, wow, that really does look good, right? That really does look good. Good lighting just makes everything else easier, right? It makes post-production easier. You don't have to retouch. You don't have to do a lot of shadows, highlights work. You just don't have to do much of anything. Maybe adjust the color a little bit, maybe do a little cropping and call it a day. So it's worth it to spend that little bit of extra time up front to get the lighting the way you want so that you can save time all down the production process. So the five things that I'd like you to keep in mind next time you decide to shoot a little bit of video of some people, next time you decide to do a portrait shoot of a family member or for hire, or next time that you yourself are going to get in front of the camera, rather for video conferencing or for selfie, are these five things. Side lighting versus front lighting. Go with front lighting as much as possible. The size of the light source matters. You want that light source as big as possible. Distance matters as well. You want that large light source as close to you as possible. If you can't avoid backlighting, then compensate for it either by filling in light or by using exposure compensation. And remember that this work that you do for good lighting technique will save you time down the whole production pipeline. And it just makes the shots look better, right? A lot of times, good lighting at capture produces a shot that would be very difficult to produce as well in post-production, doing all your highlights and shadows and everything else sliders. So keep those things in mind while you're doing all the things that you're doing right now, either online or on your camera or however you're doing it. These lighting techniques will help you look better, and they'll help the people that you point your camera to look so much better. Remember, what I like to say all the time is, I want the best version of you for this picture. The most stress-free and straightforward place to sell your used gear. I ran across this article on F-stoppers, and I liked it. And I was just thinking that, you know, a lot of people right now are probably thinking about selling some of their gear. There's all sorts of new stuff coming out. Maybe they're thinking of switching systems, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I thought, this is a good story. This is a good timely story for selling your digital gear. Now, obviously, if you're getting rid of analog gear, I hope you send me a note, right? And give me a chance to use it in the film camera shop. But for your digital gear, for swapping systems, for upgrading, for getting a new lens, this is a pretty cool article on F-stoppers, and I have a link to the full article, which you want to take a look at, okay? But let me read you a little bit about it. Selling gear always makes me feel more nervous than buying it for some reason. it is also more of a hassle, not just because I have to pack and ship all the gear, that is generally unavoidable, but because I have to deal with things like increasing commission fees and the like. eBay has gotten ridiculous, in my opinion, as their final value fee now stands at 10%, meaning if I sell a lens for $2,000, $200 goes out the door to eBay. Sure, eBay should get some kind of commission, whether it is a flat fee or percentage, but I personally feel that 10% is quite exorbitant for the service provided. So I started looking for alternative places to sell gear. There are a lot of dedicated groups for this sort of thing on Facebook, some particularly large. One thing eBay always had going for it that Facebook does not, however, is a robust feedback system. That made it a bit easier to trust the process of selling to strangers, as I could immediately see if I was working with a trustworthy person. That being said, what is it that I prefer? Now, of course, I'm reading the article, so I'm quoting the author. I use Fred Miranda's Buy and Sell forums. This site was founded in 2000 and features an extensive forum network, including a very active buy and sell forum. So why do I like them over other options? First of all, it is a buy and sell forum by photographers for photographers. This means that as a buyer, you can find pretty much any bizarre esoteric body or lens that you want. And with hundreds of new posts each day, there's a steady flow of options. And thanks to the feedback system, it's easy to trust who you're dealing with. The best part, though, is the price. As I mentioned earlier, I left eBay because the commission fees had gotten out of control. Fred Miranda, on the other hand, does not charge any commissions for selling gear, only a flat fee to be a member of the buy and sell forum. The current price is $15 for 30 days, $29 for 3 months, and $59 for a year. Though you can buy things for free, only those who want to post items for sale need to pay for membership. And then there's more to this article, but the reason why I decided to share it with you, other than I think this is timely right now, given all of our circumstances, given that we might want to change gear, given all the new things that are happening, given that people are possibly changing systems and want to get, you know, good dollars for what they have right now. But I have heard many, many, many good things about Fred Miranda. And this is probably the first article that I've seen actually wrote about the site. So I recommend it. I'm very comfortable with what's going on there. This author recommends it as well. I think it's pretty cool. So if you're thinking about selling some of your digital gear, you know, for whatever reason, or if you're looking to add to your digital collection, then take a look at the Fred Miranda site. I think it is a good place for photographers, run by photographers. The essential steps to impressive video conferencing. So I was talking about lighting today. And one of those places that lighting so important is on video conference calls. I have a 1 hour tutorial. It's like a class on video conferencing that covers everything that you need to know. It talks about the audio, talks about the video, talks about environment. Obviously, we cover lighting. You see pictures of a lot of the stuff that I was talking about in today's podcast. You get a lot of tips. I just think that it's really essential training for the world that we're living in right now, and I think we'll be living in all through 2021 and beyond. There are links to this video. It's $14.95. There are links to it in the show notes. Or you can just go over to thenimblephotographer.com, click on our workshops page, see all the trainings that I have there, including the essential steps to impressive video conferencing. This is what photos from a $6,000 compact camera look like. And this is from Digital Camera World. And I am so glad that this article surfaced because I've been posting about the new Zeiss ZX-1 compact camera that has a fixed Zeiss 35mm f2 wide-angle lens and a full-frame sensor and includes, you know, Lightroom, Android version of Lightroom. has all sorts of, has a whole bunch of memory. I think it has 256 gigabytes of internal memory. So I've been posting about this camera and, you know, talking about, would you pay $6,000 for this camera? It's 37 megapixels. But what these guys did is they got a piece, I believe it's from Zeiss, where Zeiss had three top photographers go out and take pictures with this camera. And then they're posting pictures by these top photographers taken with the Zeiss ZX-1. And you actually get to look at shots from the camera. And they're cool shots too. This is fun to look at. I mean, the photographs are fun to look at regardless. But if you're curious about what a $6,000 camera can do, you want to go over to this article. Let me just read you a little bit from the article. After 2 years of waiting, the Zeiss ZX-1 compact camera is now available for pre-order. Costing $6,000, this camera with its fixed 35mm f2 wide-angle lens justifies its high price tag with its designer looks, precision engineering, and its full-frame sensor. The camera also has built-in Android computer operating system, which means it has Lightroom built-in. But what do the pictures taken with this luxury compact look like? We have yet to get this camera for review, and we suspect, given the Zeiss ZX-1 is only going on sale in Germany and the USA, that this unusual camera may be hard to find on sale when it actually goes on sale in November. But to give a taste of what this camera can do, Zeiss has handily provided sample images from three professional photographers who have been using this 37 megapixel ZX-1. All right. So you'll get to see it for yourself. Now, by the way, I just want to say, calling it a compact camera, when I look at it and I look how it fits in people's hands, when I see pictures of it, I would say calling it a compact is a little bit of a stretch. It's not really a compact. I mean, it's not as big as a DSLR, but it's not a compact either. It's a pretty good size camera. It's got this great lens. It's got the operating system. It's got all the memory. It's got all this sort of stuff. It's, you know, everything is matched, which is one of the things that Sigma used to say, you know, about their fixed lens cameras. And it's something that Fuji does quite well. You know, with my camera, the X100V, you know, everything is matched. And that's the nice thing about having a fixed lens camera. You don't have to worry about the other lenses going on. You just dial everything in for that lens that's on there at that time. So would I spend $6,000 for the ZX-1? Probably not. But, you know, I'm not a hater on it either. I think it's an intriguing camera. I would actually like to borrow one for a month and just shoot with it and see what I think. I think that would be fun. But, you know, $6,000 right now during a pandemic, that's a little rich for my blood. But it does look cool, and I do like the shots. And if you're curious and sort of like, I'd like to know what this thing can really do sort of way, go to the link that's in the show notes and check out this article and look at those shots. They're fun shots. They're fun shots. Okay, let's do a little virtual camera club business. I got a few things to talk about here. We're in the middle of our online Eastern Sierra Photography Workshop. I'm having a lot of fun. I feel like everyone is having a lot of fun. We've got 15 people in on this. The big to-do, the grand flurry finish is this Friday and Saturday coming up. I'm really looking forward to it. This is going to be something that I'm going to continue to weave into the different ways that we can work together, that our community can connect with one another. And we're learning a lot on this workshop, and I think we're going to do another one right on the heels of it. I think next week I'll be able to give you kind of, you know, the final word on this. But right now I have to tell you, you know, we have an online community set up. We've got, you know, everything all wired up. We've got pictures coming in. We're chatting up each other's shots. I think this is something that's going to stick through next year. And if, obviously, we'll do physical workshops again when we can. But now I think we'll have this and physical workshops instead of just physical workshops. So I'm excited about that. It just allows me to work with more of you. And that is fun. I want to give a big thanks to our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that keep us going month in and month out with their support. They're a great group of people. and we run it all through Patreon, which I think does a very nice job of managing, you know, these sort of things. If you're interested in our inner circle, if you're interested in seeing what's going on, we have a Patreon tile on all the pages of The Digital Story. You can just click on that tile. It takes you over to our site. You can see some of the posts. You can, you know, get a feel for the thing. And then you can become a member for only $5 a month. And believe me, if you want to be active, you know, if you want to watch the trainings that I've produced, if you want to attend our workshops, you know, you get discounts for all of this stuff that well exceed the $5 a month that you're spending. So the discounts are far more than the money that you're investing, but yet you're still helping support. I mean, this is a win-win situation. If you're interested in joining this group of artists who support this podcast and everything else that we do, then again, the Patreon tiles on all the pages of Digital Story. Go over there, check it out, and hopefully you will join us. And a big thanks to all of our Inner Circle members. I truly appreciate your support. You know, I was talking about the Zeiss camera just a few minutes ago. I will say this, that if you decide that you want to buy one, and you decide that you want to buy it either from Amazon or B&H, would you please, please, please go to thedigitalstory.com first. Click on the Amazon tile or click on the B&H tile that's in the second column, and then navigate over to the camera and buy it. We will get affiliate credit for that. And those $6,000 cameras, even though our percentage is very small, they add up quickly with $6,000 purchases. I'm just saying that if you're going to buy that camera, please stop by the Digital Story first and click on one of those tiles. And finally, a big shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, the inkjet paper specialists. They have a surface for just about any project that you want to do. They have sizes that go all the way from a small postcard size all the way up to something that you would put above a couch on the wall. They have archival paper that can go in a museum. They have metallic paper that looks like metallic, but it's paper. They have beautiful, beautiful matte papers, you know, that are just gorgeous and feel wonderful in the hands. They have all of this stuff. And they have everything to go along with it, including ink, including envelopes, including glassine sleeves, including trainings and reviews. Really, if you're going to start printing, which I think you should now to be ready for the holidays, make a stop at Red River Paper first. Get your supplies, get some different paper surfaces, get some fine art cards, get the goodies that you need, have it at your place, either your home office or your studio, where you happen to be, and be ready to go, because who knows, you may go, you know what, I need to come up with something for Aunt Jane like by tomorrow, and she would love this print of this picture that I took. She's always talked about it, and I can do this right now, and it'll look spectacular on Red River Paper. Longest running sponsor of The Digital Story, and they have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. Let's get our lighting together and let's look good. Cross your fingers that everything goes smoothly with the election, and then come back and join me next week. I'm looking forward to spending more time with you. Until then, be safe. Be creative. Bye-bye now.